into the tape.
To where it goes now.
Good morning, everybody. I'll call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, July 31st, 2018. And I would ask if everybody please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you and good morning. It's nice to see everyone here today. First item on our agenda, as always, is public comment number one. It's an opportunity for anybody to come up and talk to the board about anything you want to talk to the board about. Anybody wishing to do so, come on up. And seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to agency reports. And our first presentation today is by Iowa Able and Jill Crosser. Hi, Jill. Come right on up here to the desk. Well, thank you for coming to see us today.
Yeah. Good morning.
Would you like us?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And if you wouldn't mind, start by introducing yourselves.
I'm Jill Crosser. I'm the former executive director of Iowa Able. Right now, I'm associate director. And this is Anna McNuffin. She's our new executive director as of tomorrow.
Congratulations.
So I'm breaking her in without a real break-in period. So, actually, I think what I'll do is hand.
I'll do that.
Yeah, do you want to do that?
I can do that.
Okay. So I know a lot of you have probably heard of Iowa Able. You want a little recap first?
Absolutely, please.
The Iowa Able Foundation is a Story County-based but statewide agency that provides financial services to Iowans with disabilities and the aging. I see ourselves as a bridge to mainstream lending. We have connections and partnerships with banks throughout the state. We are providing loans to underbanked and unbanked Iowans for assistive technology, home and vehicle modifications. We have a credit builder program, and then also a business loan program. Let's see, it's almost 2019. So in 2016, end of 15, start of 16, we started a financial coaching component to our program. And as you can see, there's two brochures. We kind of separated them a little bit to really hone in on what those services are. All applicants have free financial coaching with our accredited financial counseling staff. And we have a one-on-one goal setting, or we usually start with, this is how you pull your credit report, this is how you read your credit report, this is how you may need to dispute things on your credit report, and then the goal setting starts from there, any financial goal that they have. That's kind of a general recap.
Outstanding.
Yeah. We are located in Ames on Sheldon, where all the construction is with the new building, Lincoln Way and Sheldon, in the same building as the Arc. So.
Ames is always under construction.
That corner's been really bad, though.
I know.
You can't get in or out. So.
Super.
Yeah, and Anna will join us tomorrow on a part-time basis for about a month and a half or so, and then start full-time with the new fiscal year.
Outstanding. So tell me what we here in Story County can do to better assist Iowa Able achieving the goals you have set.
Wonderful. Thank you for asking that, actually. Being a statewide agency, it's really hard to get your name out in 99 counties. And so what we look for is not only referrals, but help us with just getting the word out of who we are and that we do exist. We are the only service like this in Story County, in most of the counties in Iowa, being a micro lender for such a specific thing, and acting as a bridge to mainstream lending. I know there's financial coaching services out there, but for people that want to become banked or bankable, this is kind of the practice run for how that works. So if a person takes out a credit builder loan of $500, they're paying it back over 6 to 12 months. Instead of, if they're late on their payment, instead of dinging them or reporting that to the credit bureau, this is kind of the safe place that we can report a positive payment and work with the individual, see what's going on. Did their disability worsen? Are they in the hospital? What happened? Do you have a financial hurdle that you had to get across or whatever that may be. So what we look for is partnership, letting people know of our services so that we can provide our services.
I noticed that you partner with Vocational Rehabilitation, the state program.
Yeah.
Who would be other partners likely that you work with?
Well, we have a contract with Easter Seals. If you're familiar with Easter Seals, it was formerly under the IPAT entity. IPAT now has moved over to the Iowa Program for Assistive Technology. They're now under the Easter Seals entity, so all of the assistive technology, we fit together because of the assistive technology. So if someone comes to us and says, I need this device, I need this equipment, and it's very expensive, and maybe they need to be assessed to make sure that's the right thing that they need before they spend the money, we can send them to Easter Seals for an assessment. We work with a lot of the county United Ways, working with any of the service providers in those counties to help do financial coaching classes and whatnot. Voc Rehab is probably one of the larger referral sources for us.
Thanks. Yeah. Right, well,
no, just on those brochures you were passing out, do you have extras? I don't believe we have.
Oh, yeah.
I'm fired already on my first day.
I didn't know how many to expect you there, so I can bring more if anyone needs some.
Thank you very much.
All right, well, thank you and welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Alison, what else should we know?
Well, we have a group financial literacy class happening next month in Webster City. Basically, when a county sees a need or they have heard of us, they may say, hey, we, a service provider in the area may have 5 or 6 people that they're working with that see a need for a class. That's all it takes for us, usually, because we can write a grant or we can look at different funding options. So in Story County, if a service provider was looking for some financial literacy or a group class of some sort, we can absolutely provide that service. We like to partner with banks, and banks like to partner with us, and they sometimes cover the cost of that and the materials and food and things like that. So really, we're just looking to expand our services. We've got new leadership. We're growing. We just hosting a group class in the Blackhawk County area, and we now have a coach over there, so we're looking to expand throughout the state, so not just in Story County, but everywhere in the state of Iowa. So.
Well, thank you for coming to present to us today, and welcome on board your first day tomorrow.
Thank you. I learned a lot, so thank you for that.
Well, good luck. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Next, we've got the ARC of Story County, the annual report, and Tricia is here to give that to us.
Good morning.
Morning. Tricia. Morning, Mrs. Crane.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. Okay. So, the ARC of Story County receives funding for our 4 programs through the asset process. Our special recreation program, Active Lifestyles, continues to thrive in large part from the funding we receive from CICS, the city, and United Way. We are serving almost 200 athletes this year. We added Unified Softball along with our regular softball teams this summer. The Unified Softball program joins our Unified Golf and Cheerleading programs, and Unified means that for each one of our Special Olympic athletes, we also have a non-disabled athlete paired up with them. We do exhaust our funds in early spring each year. For fiscal year 2019, we received an increase in funding from CICS to see us through the last 3 months of programming each year. People with disabilities in Story County have grown to know Active Lifestyles program as a safe, social, and healthy activity in which they can participate, grow, and be contributing members in our community. The United Way of Story County is the only asset funder that supports us financially as the ARC advocates for people with disabilities. We have added raising awareness programs to educate our members and self-advocates on issues that are important to them. This year, we partnered with Planned Parenthood and held 6 classes on health and positive relationships. An ISU student completed her food and nutrition internship with the ARC by conducting 15 classes on nutrition and cooking. And lastly, a group of students from Drake University who are in an advocacy and leadership class held four classes for our self-advocate centered on advocacy development and community involvement. And in September, the ARC will co-host our biannual legislature forum that I hope a few of you will be attending. Care coordination is an important aspect of the day-to-day services the ARC provides. Families new to the community and in search of services are for which services are suitable for their child see the ARC as a place to receive answers and learn what is available in the community. Project Search is beginning its third year at Iowa State on August 6th. This year, we moved from 4 students the past 2 years to 10 students this fall. We have internship sites across campus, including the School of Education, Recreational Services, the Iowa State Daily, Transportation, Parks Library, Dining, and the Ivy College of Business, to name a few. Project Search is a 9-month-long employment training program for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. The participants receive classroom instruction coupled with 3 different internship rotations. Project Search is a national program with an employment success rate of 92%. The ARC is not a typical employment provider. We saw a need in the community and researched the best program. IVRS will continue to provide funding for the internship portion of the 9-month-long program. This program has allowed us to meet the emerging needs of our participants and meet a growing need in our county for quality employment services for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. The ARC has also been an integral member of getting the inclusive playground and miracle field to fruition in Story County. Regardless of whether one is in a wheelchair or has an intellectual disability, all people want and deserve the right to play, which is a vital part of our development and inclusion. As always, it is a privilege for the ARC to provide services in Story County and use those services to assist others in living a life that the rest of us may take for granted. So along with the inclusive playground, Marty, can I call you Marty?
Yes, you can call me Marty. No, Marty's fine.
Asked how we were doing on that. And so we're still slating it to be a $2 million project. We believe we're at a little over $1.5 million at this point. We just got some exciting news about 2 weeks ago that we did receive $100,000 from Prairie Meadows, which most people know Prairie Meadows has not been super generous in the Story County community.
That is found money because I know a lot of school districts and municipalities apply to it.
Right.
It is almost a note in a bottle and a small creek, and from them to get $100,000 is a big deal.
Yes, yeah. So, and we also have one more large ask out to Variety. We've met with several of their board members, given them presentations, met with the executive director of Variety last spring to make sure that we were doing everything correctly that we needed to do in hopes of getting a couple $100,000 from them. So we're hoping then with what we will receive from in-kind that we will hopefully be there within the next month or two and with planned construction beginning early next spring.
That's exciting. A lot of work, and thank you so much. Tell us date in September for your legislative forum. Do you have it?
You haven't received anything?
Maybe. I want to make sure.
I believe it's the 18th.
Okay.
Yes. 18th Ames Public Library.
Okay.
And that is co-sponsored with NAMI, and so it's based on disability issues.
Super.
I have one more question, getting back to the inclusive playground.
Mm-hmm.
And as discussions went forward, it was discovered that we may be hampered in some of the ways we thought originally we might be able to fund. Okay, so instead there was some money that was requested through the funds that we do for economic development in Story County Economic Pool. And are you planning on making another ask for more marketing? I think it was marketing funds is what it was.
I'm sure. And I thought part of those funds had to do with the trail going in on the park, too. Is that? Drew's not here. Drew would know for sure.
So my understanding at this point, so there's been no follow-up request, but I don't think you should read that to mean there's not going to be a follow-up request.
Right.
As I'm understanding,
if you want a request, we will follow up with a request.
I think there's one comment. I think there's one comment. I've heard rumblings that it has to do with a trail and access to the park. It also could have to do with relocation of existing equipment that's there and how all that might work. But, Lourdes, I think you could feel pretty certain that there will be a request coming to us.
You can feel so certain.
Okay.
And,
the last I knew was that it did have to do with a trail that would connect 24th Street and Duff to the complex.
Okay. Thank you.
Good. Any other questions? Tricia, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And next we've got Ira Wall's annual report, and I know I saw Cynthia and others here today. Pull up another chair.
Oh, I'm just going to be a minute.
All right.
I'm Cynthia Tyler Bishop. I'm the CEO at Ireley Ball Community Health Services. And I'm going to have Christina Engel and Heather Thomas provide the majority of the report because they're much more exciting than I am. And just if there's one thing that I would like for you to take away from our report today is that Ireley Ball's footprint is becoming bigger in Story County, and I'm really, really excited about that. The support that we get from Story County and the CICS region is absolutely wonderful. And Heather's going to report on our outpatient clinic. What I want to take away is that we offer a lot of community-based services. As a community mental health center, we offer community-based services. And what's so important about our community-based services is they keep people out of the hospital and out of the emergency room. So if we can continue to put more resources in our community-based services, we certainly want to continue to do that, to keep people out of the hospital and out of the emergency rooms. That's our goal. And we also focus a lot on social determinants of health, which also help keep people healthy, beyond just their mental health, but health all the way around from safe housing to good food, all of the many social determinants of health. That's what a community mental health center does. So that's what I want you to take away. And I think Heather's going to start talking about our outpatient clinic. She's our new quote unquote director. Heather's back. She left for just a little bit and she came back and we're thrilled that she's back. She's doing wonderful work. And Christina Engel is our mobile crisis response team director. So, you guys.
Okay.
I'm thrilled to be back.
Stay close. We
can move over.
Okay.
So I'm Heather Thomas. I'm the clinical director of our outpatient services, as Cynthia said, and I am thrilled to be back. My report's pretty straightforward. We offer outpatient services, so that's medication management with a prescriber and then therapy services at an outpatient setting. We're located in Ames on University is where we're at. And as Cynthia said, a lot of what we do is also a lot of coordination with our community-based services. And one exciting change that is coming in the next couple of months, between end of August, early September, is that those community-based services are really moving into the same building that the outpatient therapy and medication management services are in. So we're really excited about that because we keep finding the more that we're collaborating internally and the closer we are, just the easier it is to really make sure clients have that full spectrum of services with really one team. So that's been very exciting. In the last probably 6 months or so, there's been a lot of increased changes with that. One of the other exciting things I'll just mention about our clinic services is that we also have with one specific community-based program called Connections, we have an individual who is really, I call it my favorite position in the company, which I probably shouldn't, but I do. She does not have restrictions on her in terms of funding of what she can and cannot do. So our goal is to get her a high utilizer list connected with Mary Greeley as well as other hospitals, Boone and here, and really utilize her to figure out how to get creative with folks who otherwise might be in between services or have no idea how to navigate the mental health system because it's very complex. She can assist families. She can provide education on commitment, just a bunch of different things. So that's a very exciting position.
I'm going to ask, I think the outpatients is the best place to ask this. Okay. What is the wait time between first contact and the first appointment?
That's a great question. So we've worked for several years with this company called MTM, like a consultant company. And they're nationally organized for really being the best practices for how you improve access. So we've been working with them. So our call, if you called us today, what you would hear from the front desk is to say, we do walk-ins. You can just walk in for services on Thursday. So if you're just, you don't have I'm not suicidal right now. I don't have an urgent need. It's You come in on Thursday, and you will either be seen by a therapist that day, or we would schedule you if we had, say, recently we've had sometimes 14 people show up. So then what we do is we analyze that data every month and increase our evals or decrease them.
Sorry, back to this a minute. So on Thursdays,
yes,
is walk-in Thursday.
Yeah.
But if there are too many people, some people will get scheduled.
Sometimes we'll schedule them for the next day then,
okay,
if there are
it.
Too many.
Okay.
So to answer, the short answer should have been, basically, if I call Thursday afternoon, that's going to be my longest wait, about a week. It could go into Friday. Usually we have capacity that very next day, so it could be 8 days. But it's generally speaking 7 days, if at longest. So it's a walk-in process.
Okay.
And we'll actually be expanding that here in August or September. We'll increase and add another day because we're seeing the volume has increased in the last few weeks.
And then tell me about that volume, please. There are no statistics. I pulled out my asset book here.
I apologize. I was just telling Christina, why didn't I put any numbers in this? So we report numbers every month and quarter to CACS also. So I was just sitting here thinking, what were my last numbers that I reported? And I believe each month we're about 750 services we're providing every month. I can't recall the exact number of clients, but that would be the number of services. So one individual, that would be like individual services or medication management appointments total. So about 750 per month. I apologize that that wasn't in there. Mm-hmm.
Anything else for us?
No, not on this one.
Okay. Anything else on
outpatient
before
we're
going to mobile
crisis? We're ready.
All right, so excited about mobile crisis.
Well, that's wonderful. I apologize. I have a cold in July. I don't know how that happened. So I'm Christina Engel. I'm the Director of Crisis Services. Very excited. I think some of you have heard my spiel. We are we're funded through CACS. We operate 24/7, 365 days a year. We are a team who will come out in teams of two and respond to anyone experiencing a mental health crisis. And we do not define that for people. So it could be depression, anxiety, suicidal, homicidal ideations, paranoid thoughts, hallucinations, delusions, substance use, and any combination thereof. So we do not define that crisis. People call into our 1-800 number, which is also contracted to CACS, so I will leave a stack of cards here. Feel free to take as many as you want, and I do have more. They call into that number, and they kind of talk to the over-the-phone counselors, and then they kind of help determine whether or not our in-person team would be helpful. And we actually respond into the community. So homes, I've been to Target. I don't know who's suicidal at Target, because that is my heaven on earth. I've been to tents under bridges. I've been into jail cells. I've been all over. So we respond into the community. So we go to where that person is to meet their need at that time. And that's what's ideal about this. We always respond in teams of two. All of our counselors, we have about 60 counselors, all of them fit the Chapter 24 code. So it could be therapists, nurses, bachelor level, paraprofessionals. We have a retired police chief, so police officers, EMTs. There's a long list, little light reading Chapter 24 for you. And so we respond within 1 hour of receipt of the call. For Ames, we are averaging 35.2 minutes is when we respond. So Story County, we have a pretty good response time because a lot of our central team counselors are in Story County. We do serve 11 counties, so we have three different teams that go out. In our central team, that's where you guys are worried about. That's where a story is included in. Currently, we started going live on March 26th. Since then, we have taken 144 calls, and only 22 of those people have been brought to the hospital. So ultimately, our ultimate goal is to keep people from the hospital. We have counseled and referred 92 within the field. And so if you think about how you hit those ER doors, it costs about $1,000 a pop minimum. So at that point, we have saved at least $92,000 of some of those. A lot of those are Medicaid-funded individuals. And so the ultimate goal is really to help these people in the community in their time of need. The unique opportunity that we have with our team is we do follow up within 24 hours with case management services. So we've done some really cool things with that case management. We do operate with that 7 days a week. So if you call out on a Friday, you're going to have somebody following back up with you on Saturday. We've helped a blind woman get a medication management machine that kind of spits out her meds for her. We've helped individuals get a job over at a college that they were really hoping to do. And we've had another one who we've done some budgeting and financing and helped him with his food stamps. So we do a lot of unique different things. We can help clients get to appointments, set up medication appointments, therapy appointments, whatever it may be. We just want to help them in that time of need so we can keep them from going into the hospital.
So, you go first.
Morning, Christina. Obviously, this was something that was needed as your statistics bear out. I'm the board rep to CICS.
Yeah.
Yesterday, got an email from Jill Eaton that said, as we speak, Cheryl Gordo was talking about potentially doing an outreach to join us in our region. And I look at the mobile response, knowing it is a tremendous financial lift for the region, and the fact that we felt with taking on Greene County that we would be stretching ourselves geographically on a service basis. And I guess at some point I'd like you to speak where you guys are at on capacity, because the conversation will turn back to the region in regards to if we have any asks of us to grow as people see the success that we're having on a regional basis, and we are actually seen as one of the bright lights in the regional mental health story, where you would say that we have nowhere at our limit, or we might have possible ability to move additionally, but it will come at a cost. So could you help me get to an answer?
Yeah, so with Sarah Gordo specifically, that would team up there with our northern counties, so that would be part of our north team. And at this point, we aren't stretched thin up north. We are seeing more and more increase in the central and the south teams. We are very busy. But as far as the northern team, we would have capacity for that.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yes.
One of the issues that I ask about, and I've asked probably for the last few years in various forums and committees, is that the client choice.
Right.
Okay.
Yep.
How do you handle client choice? I mean, it's mandated that clients be appropriately informed that they don't have to use you for case management services or for services. How do you handle that in the mobile crisis?
So a lot of times who's calling in is usually the individuals themselves. Sometimes it's law enforcement. Sometimes it might be a provider. But they usually are informing that client that this is what's happening, as well as the call center. So the call center also assesses to make sure that that individual is aware that we're voluntary and that we're coming out to speak to them. So that's before they even send us. That's one of the things that the call center assesses for. And if they change their mind and we get there and they decide, actually, I don't want to talk to you, that's fine. We step back. We might leave a card or a brochure, and off we go. So we don't force anyone to use our services.
So what about after, let's say you respond.
Yeah.
Suicidal, I'm going to take whoever comes to help me. Okay. But now I'm 24 hours later. You've gotten me in, gotten some medication in me, or got me back on my meds. But then what happens?
So for the case management, that's also voluntary. So we do actually have a lot of people who are in the state of crisis and really want our services, but then don't want us after that, and that's okay too. Actually, 86% of our people have stayed involved, so we've only seen about 14%. Some of them fall off for a week or two, but then they come back in, and so we're willing to offer that for up to 30 days. And if they call us after that 30 days, we're not going to shut them down. We will do what we can to help. So it's all very voluntary.
Can I ask a clarifying question? Are you asking, are we only referring into Ireland Ball from that case management, or
yeah,
are we
pretty much
China?
I am. And attend the Juvenile Justice Committee and been that for 12 plus years. Okay, and that's an issue I brought up before. I brought up with Chuck Sykosh is when you're responding in Ames. Okay, are you? It sounds like it's being funneled right in. And of course, the Ames police has a liaison who picks up the phone and calls you. I mean, I just want to make sure that client rights are really protected in a vulnerable period of time.
That's our biggest thing, is protecting those clients. I'm a huge client advocate, and so I instill that in all of our counselors, and that's what's most important. So also for Ireland Ball, a lot of us, we don't refer always back to Ireland Ball. We figure out what meets their needs best, so whatever that may be.
And you mentioned the global crisis. We did global crisis for 15 years in Polk County, and the point isn't to bring those people in to our services. It's to hook up those clients back to the services that they currently have services. We want to we will coordinate with their current providers. That's what the case managers do.
Well, and the whole point of the service, Cynthia, as I understand it, is to deal with somebody who's in crisis right now and get them back on the pathway they need to be on to not be in crisis, where we're not dealing with it as much with law enforcement and emergency room visits.
That's right.
And so appreciative of the work you're doing. I do have a numbers question, just because I'm curious. So what I see is that two-thirds of the calls in Story County have been law enforcement initiated.
Yep.
I know Ames has been heavy in being so excited about the service being offered in Story. But I'm curious how our numbers compare specifically to Jasper and Warren. Is there some anecdotal reason that you can give me that Jasper has doubled the number of calls?
The Jasper County Sheriff is a huge fan of the mobile crisis team. We have taken a lot of high utilizers off of his list. And so I think there's a huge push to use our service because it has taken those high utilizers off. The other thing to note is Jasper, Warren, Madison, and Poweshiek counties all went live on that March date, and then the central team went live on May 29th. So they did have a little bit of a head start.
So a two-month head start. Okay.
Yeah.
So would a reasonable expectation be that we're going to see more calls?
That's what we're hoping for. Exactly.
And how does this fit in with jail diversion services?
So we can work together with them. It kind of just depends on if we get called to individuals who are in that program. So then at that point, our case management gets together with their team. Yes, you got it.
Sure.
You are welcome.
You guys did an awesome job. Appreciate it. Morris, did you have more questions?
No, I didn't. I'm all answered.
I'll need some cards. So
perfect. Please
management
do. Thank you, guys. And thank you for what you provided the Story County.
Thanks.
Absolutely. All right, next is minutes from July 24th.
I'll step in.
Okay, yeah. You missed a lot. We've got a motion in a second. Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Minutes pass. Personnel actions as listed, board.
I will move as presented.
Second.
Thank you. Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Personnel actions pass. Consent agenda board.
As listed.
Aye. Second.
Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Consent agenda passes in total. Public hearing items. We do have one today. Consideration of resolution 19-06. And this is an FY19 budget amendment. As we get the year started, Lisa.
Good
morning, Mrs. Markley.
Kelly referred to this as the Lisa agenda today. I'm referring to a lot. I'm sorry about that.
You are on it a lot.
Get a lot taken care of. First thing is the budget amendment. I came to you to move forward with this a few weeks ago. It was published on July 19th as required by law. What we're doing is amending the revenues by $341,000, which is regional reimbursement for the crisis center and for the mobile stabilization center, $85,000 from DAPL, so that we can continue paying the ongoing inspection fees on that. We're amending expenses by $2.3 million. About 85% of that is carry forward money in the amount of $2 million. Examples of carry forward are the Tedesco learning environment, the animal shelter remodel, insurance reserve for a vehicle that the sheriff hasn't gotten replaced yet, but it's going to happen soon. Facilities equipment, remodeling of the building over in Ames Community Life, $88,000 worth of equipment and machinery from the conservation, and $235,000 worth of secondary roads, real estate, and buildings. And then additional staff and animal control that was not finalized at budget time, but we did add, so I wanted to get that in there too.
Uh-huh.
We are actually, our ending fund balance, that's where I was going to go. After this amendment, ending fund balance still looks fairly strong. The general supplemental is at 33%. Mental health, 33%, that's not a big deal anymore. 20% on secondary roads.
In fact, our overall ending fund balance, even with this amendment, is $3 million more than we originally budgeted. which just tells you what a strong position we're in. I want, so generally speaking, as I look at this, this is made up of two components, right? It is the carry forward that you mentioned before in Tedesco and equipment and things like that, that money that was budgeted for FY18 that didn't get spent in 18 due to timing. The equipment wasn't available, or they didn't finish construction at Tedesco, or whatever it is. And then the second component is almost, should be viewed as pass-through dollars, right? $85,000 in the DAPL coming in and going back out, $341,000 from the region coming in and going back out as we redo the crisis facility. Is that an accurate way to portray what's happening here?
Yes.
Board questions.
Not everything that we do propose or wish to have done happens in a clean-cut fashion. It moves from one fiscal to the next. That's what I say.
As Laura and I talk pretty regularly, this is government. It generally takes us longer than we expect to get these things done. Laura, questions or comments?
None. Once again, thank you for the clarity in the presentation and then with the support documents and the whole thing. I'll just say the thank you once for the Elisa. How's that? Okay.
Yeah, and just to point out, total ending fund balance is still in excess of $20 million. This is the first time Story County has ever started a fiscal year with more than $20 million in our ending fund balance. It gives us capacity to deal with something unforeseen that hopefully doesn't come along but could. If there's no other questions, I would
open the public hearing.
No questions.
All right, let's open the public hearing. Is there anybody who would like to address the board on Resolution 1906, the appropriation amendment, the budget amendment? Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll close the public hearing. I'll turn to the board for action.
I approve adoption of Resolution 19-06 as presented.
I second.
Motion and a second. Anything further?
Yeah.
Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Resolution 1906 passes. Thanks, Lisa.
I am going to note right now that I found out yesterday that there's some, well, you guys approved public hearings today that are going to also require another budget amendment, so I'm planning on the end of August again for another one.
A couple of these as we get started. Might be more than you want.
You smile about that.
All right, we're to additional items, consideration of Resolution 1909, and this is our fund balance resolution.
From FY18. So I don't put the fund balance resolution in front of you until the year has ended. And so we're skipping back and forth between 18 and 19 this time, but just for clarity, it is for FY18. In our general fund, this is required by GASB 54, by the way, so that's why I present it to you, and it also gives us a very good explanation of what our funds are for and where they're at.
Right.
So in the general fund, we have assigned dollars of $1.3 million. Those are assigned for those items that are listed there. And over the years, we either assigned or used and assigned. The inmate commissary, county attorney fine collection, and conservation acquisition and capital projects are also considered assigned general fund dollars, but they're their own funds. Those dollars are not per code, so they cannot be restricted or anything like that. So they are assigned general fund dollars for GASB 54. Okay. In the restricted, which means they're restricted for only the uses listed.
I have a question about the fine collection.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Last year, it seems like there were fewer fines collected than we went ahead and had gone ahead and budgeted for. Is that accurate?
Let's see. I'll look at the fine. Yes, there was probably more revenues budgeted. They also haven't spent anything
the last couple of years.
They changed that law again.
Right.
That lowered. So we're not getting as much. We're budgeting $30,000 for this year for revenues. I think we're probably lucky to get that.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure my tracking.
Yes. The restricted fund balances are restricted to the uses that are specified in the code for all of those different funds. So those are what our restricted dollars were at the end of FY18. And then committed funds are also, they can only be uncommitted if the board uncommits them, okay? So at this point, as of FY18, we still have in the general fund committed of $1.6 million mm-hmm.
and $641,000. And that's the Avenue Transfer Partners dollars, and that's the dollars that we put aside for the motor grader.
And the $651,000 is the motor grader lease, yes. Yes, which we are going to, we show as spending in FY19 because that was one of the things that the lease is up, so we're going to have to figure out what to do, so we do show spending that.
That will be an interesting conversation as we go. But that's what those dollars exist.
Right.
All right.
Questions on any of that?
Yeah, so just a kind of a general statement. So as we talk about, as we concluded our last action item, we talked about the $20 million total in amounts. The numbers that you see represented here are all part of that $20 million, and this just tells us, right, so you've got part of that 20, it's dollars in different silos of what they can appropriately be used for, and then within those silos from time to time, either code requires that it be assigned, we commit, or we restrict, just in order to, well, it's more accounting than anything else, but it allows us to determine when we're going to show these dollars as spent and how hard it would be to access those dollars for a purpose other than what we've got listed. Questions or comments on Resolution 1909?
Rick, you are our ex officio representative on the Conservation Board. So when we see the line item you assigned is for acquisition and capital projects on the lease, it says this is candidate fees, correct?
Right.
Dollars drive. I mean, when you guys had your conversation as far as what you do strategically and everything, when you pull from that, what does that mean?
Tell me how that conversation goes.
I mean, that's a substantial amount of money. I just like, okay, when you see that, what do you guys, as you have the conversations on what you plan, and you have a lot of planning.
Yeah, so I think all along, I think as that was put together, and Lisa, I'll just ask you to help me remember this accurately, but the idea was that we would utilize those kind of dollars to enhance our camping, right? So those are camping fees that are coming in, and we would utilize those for things like cabins or increasing campgrounds or different items like that.
I understood that when we made the Conservation Land Acquisition Fund that was going to be used to help purchase, renovate, do whatever Conservation Board was interested in doing.
And I think Conservation Board is doing it even a little more narrowly than that.
Okay. There's no expenses this year in that fund. Budgeted at this point.
Well, you're at the table in this conversation, so if you look at that, and it's just like, what do you, when you sit there and you dream and you plan, when do these dollars come into play?
Yeah, so for me, when I look at those dollars, I say we've got a drawdown getting ready to happen at Hickory Grove. We're talking about as Hickory Grove comes back online, I don't think anybody is expecting that Hickory Grove is just going to stay status quo, right? If we rebuild that lake, we're looking at how we're going to handle the wastewater, right? We've got a lagoon that's beyond its last legs. We're trying to figure out what's happening there. And I view those dollars as enhancing a park like that.
Right.
And I'm not speaking for the Conservation Board in any way, shape, or form when I say that.
Didn't we budget, though, $195,000 toward the solar cabin at Dakin's?
That is actually coming out of the 1.6 energy transfer.
That's where that came from, not out of this
one. Not out of that one, okay. And is there, as long as we're asking about dollars and whatever, is there any update on us being able to access the Friends Partnership funds that are still with the Greater Des Moines Partnership?
I don't have an answer on that.
I'm not sure.
Okay. Because in association with the HRDA board, the Greater Des Moines Partnership fund managers came and talked, and then I was discussing that with one of them later, and he said, well, you know, we think there may be a way to do that now. So I'll pass that on to you. Okay.
Absolutely. Thank you, Lars.
Yeah. Super. Other questions on Resolution 1909?
None.
Take a motion.
I move that we approve resolution for the fiscal year fund balance resolution of 1909.
Yep. That was that. And that's FY18 that we're doing this. So this is actually backwards, right? I got a motion and a second. Further discussion?
None.
Olson.
Aye.
Cheeks.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. 1909 passes. Now, 1907, which is an appropriations amendment.
We're going to go back to 19 again. So we're in FY19. You just amended the budget, and all this appropriation amendment does is put those dollars into the department so they can be spent.
Questions for Lisa? If not, I take a motion.
Move resolution 19-08 as presented.
07.
07.
07.
Don't get too far.
Okay. 07.
I'll second 07.
All right, we've got a motion and a second on resolution 1907, which just frees up the dollars to spend that we put into the budget just a minute ago. Further discussion?
Aye.
Chief?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. 1907 passes. Now, Marty, let's do 1908.
Okay, so 1908 is the resolution for interfund operating transfers. This actually, 99% of the time, I'm going to do it at the end of the fiscal, start the new fiscal. I just didn't get that accomplished, and I thought it's not something I'm going to transfer immediately anyway, so it was fine to wait until July. This is the operating transfers that you approved during the budget process of FY19. Nothing has changed. These are just what we're transferring. So the obviously 570 from general fund to secondary roads, from there's a max that we can transfer, and we're transferring about 75%.
And we've got to transfer at least 75%, or we don't.
Or we lose revenue. The 150 is for capital projects, 2.1 from rural services to secondary roads, and then the 273,350 is the last of the projects that you guys have approved, and that's the last of the dollars to move over there, so that we can fund the rest of those urban renewal projects for the city.
So that effectively takes the TIF dollars zeroed out?
It takes them to only having dollars in order to pay debt.
Okay.
For 1 year.
For one year.
Mm-hmm. Other questions on 1908? If not, I take a motion.
I'm already practiced out, so I will move a resolution 19-08 as presented.
Motion and a second. Further discussion? Chief?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. 1908 passes, and that brings us to the end of the Lisa Barkley Show.
There you go.
Thanks, Lisa.
Yep.
Next is consideration of termination of the 2080 agreement for the Kingley Branch Watershed Management Authority Agreement. This is pretty straightforward. We entered into, or we initiated this 2080 agreement back when we thought it was actually going to be the Kingley Branch Watershed. It has since evolved to become the headwaters of the South Skunk Watershed, a 2080 which we approved. Were you here when we approved that, or were you gone? So in the last couple of weeks, we've approved that and sent it on, and I would expect that others will be signing on to that one. But that means we need to terminate this original 2080 since the Kegley is not going to exist.
I would move passage move approval of termination of the 28E agreement for the Kegley Branch Watershed Management Authority.
Second.
Motion and second. Further discussion? You guys clear on why we're doing that?
Yes.
Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. No departmental reports today. That gets us to other reports, discussion, and direction on the FY20. So we just did FY18 and FY18. Now we get to talk about FY20, asset funding priorities.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. So asset is underway with planning for fiscal year 20, even though we've just started fiscal year 19. And to kick that off, we look at funder priorities. So that is what you have before you. Those are the priorities that we've had this current fiscal year. And one of the things that we talked about a year ago when we bought into the purchasing of licenses for the Clear Impact Scorecard was using data from that tool to help drive decisions in terms of
funding and which services rose to the level of meeting the county's priorities. Clear Impact Scorecard just finished up 1 year of its initial implementation. The end of June, there was a little bit of a hiccup along the way in terms of changeover of staff at United Way. So Shannon Bartle Foley left in March and was the person at United Way who got the impact scorecard off the ground and got the agencies involved with entering information into that system. Her position has a new person in it, and that person is learning all about their impact scorecard. While there is information within the system, it's really not at a level at this point in time to use to help drive any decisions in terms of the priorities. So what I ask the board is to continue to be patient. We will be working on getting that information to the level that we need it to be useful. But in the meantime, we need to look at these priorities. One of the things that we've heard from the asset volunteers, all of the volunteers, from the last allocation process was if we could have more clear direction from the funders with their priorities, that would aid us considerably in determining which services get funded and to what level the services get funded. So that's one piece. The other piece is the asset admin team did receive 8 requests for new and expanded services for fiscal year 20 to the tune of about $220,000. So in addition to, you know, what's already in the asset process. And as an admin team, we talked at length about what do we do to address the funding needs for services. When we get sizable increases of $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $100,000, and we're not able to fund those at the level that's needed, and agencies know that, but they still follow the process in terms of submitting those requests, you know, is it really helping the agency deliver the services that they feel they need to deliver? If we can't fully fund a brand new staff person, you know, what happens? Does that service have to go by the wayside or be put on a shelf until a later date? So why I'm asking for direction today is to look at addressing our priorities. Do we need to fine-tune them and make them a little more specific in order to help the volunteers make those funding recommendations that ultimately come back to the board? If you look at the 4 priorities that we have outlined, we're very specific about self-sufficiency, housing, and transportation, as well as substance abuse and co-occurring services. But then when it comes to safety, health, and well-being of children and adults, that's a catch-all kind of category. So is prevention, early intervention, those kinds of things. So I'm just looking at some kind of direction from the board in how to maybe massage these a little bit clearer to align with what the county needs to fund, wants to fund, and yet providing that necessary direction to volunteers.
No,
go ahead.
Yeah, so just 2 thoughts. First of all, I think it's completely appropriate that we would look at getting a little more specificity on the 2 that you mentioned. I think there was real value in having a little more broad-based look, especially as the county was trying to catch up with United Way and the city of Ames in terms of how we were funding. I mean, so you and I have talked about pretty regularly. The reality is that from 2000 to 2010, Story County was only able to increase its portion of asset funding 18% over that decade and fell way behind the other funders in terms of taking our share of the responsibility. Since 2010, we've been able to increase our funding of asset by 94%, so almost double what it was in 2010. And that means that we, at least from my perspective, that we finally caught back up and we are a true partner to the city of Ames and United Way, which are to make up the 3 major funders of asset. They're not the only funders, but they make up the 3 major funders. And so it seems to me that it is absolutely time for us to dig in and look at this from 2 perspectives, I think. 1, get a little more specific with how we're funding ongoing services and how we continue to rightly recognize that the cost of providing a unit of service in whatever field you're providing is going up, right? And so we've got to have a little increase if we want to just maintain the level of service we're getting. But I think we're interested in more than that. I think we're interested in finding new and creative services and expanding service. Daycare is the one that comes to my mind just immediately, right? And so is it time for us to look at more specificity in what our priorities are, but also look at maybe having two different pots of funding, if you will. One pot is existing services and funding them at a level that allows those existing services to go on, right? Hopefully, eventually, we're going to have the clear impact scorecard to show us what kind of impact that is. What I'm hearing is we're probably not going to have it for this year's discussions. But we know what services are important to us. And then the second one, which would be an entirely new concept for Story County, would be to create a secondary set of dollars that are separate from, right? They don't take away from the existing dollars or whatever increase might go there. I think we were either 5% or 6% increase this year in what I'm considering as existing dollars. But another pool of dollars that would say, if you come forward with a service that very clearly meets our priorities in an area that we feel like is underserved for Story County, and you can demonstrate that you have an expected impact in this area for Story County, that we have some dollars available to initiate a service like that. It's really thinking outside the box. It's different than what we've done.
Walk me through the administration of those dollars. Is that something that somebody would come to us as a county and access, or would it be that through the asset?
I would rather flow it through the asset. I mean, we've got an unbelievably good asset process. We've got great volunteers, but it would almost give them a way to look at. You just said there's 230-something thousand.
20,000
in new services. Right now, for every new service they put in, they've got to look at, in essence, taking something away somewhere else.
My biggest concern about having those new, I'm going to call them pilot dollars, okay?
Yeah.
All right. Having the pilot dollars go flow through asset is that to be an asset, you have to be an approved agency. And isn't it 2 years success? Deb, help me with what the requirements are to be an asset agency.
Right. So, yeah. You have to have the nonprofit status for 1 year prior to applying.
Okay. And then not everybody who applies, do they also have to be a United Way partner?
No.
Okay, well, that's good. At least that removes one of the. I don't want to put so many pre-requirements through the asset that asset already has that we would end up not being able to fund a pilot project. I'm thinking child care again here because we've got the nonprofit that we fund a couple of nonprofit child care agencies, but there's going to be other models out there. Right now, I think private's the other model, right? But if someone were to run and create another type of cooperative like APCP originally was, okay, that type of thing. So that's my only thought. So that's the through the asset process, my hesitancy.
But I don't think what I'm suggesting, I so appreciate that point of view, but I don't think what I'm suggesting precludes that ability, because what I'm hearing you talk about is something that's external to the asset process, which we already have the ability to deal with an item like that. I mean, somebody can come to us as a board of supervisors and request dollars outside the asset process if they have a program or a project. Usually, if it's an entity that's within the asset process, we tend to send them back. But if somebody were to come forward, for example, in childcare, if somebody were to come forward with an outstanding idea to start a new childcare provider in COLA, they have the ability today to come to us as a board of supervisors and say, can you help us with some of this funding? Maybe that leads them ultimately to the asset process, maybe it doesn't. But more, what I'm not talking about new, or I don't think I'm talking about new not-for-profits. I'm talking about increased services more from our existing not-for-profits. If they're already part of the asset process, that have already met that threshold, but they got an idea for a new or expanded service that meets our priorities, and right now we don't have, when we only put 5% or 6% increase either you're able to use that 5 or 6% increase to deal with the increases in units of service cost for our existing not-for-profits, or you're able to carve a little bit of that out and give less to the existing services and have a little for a new service. I would prefer to have us encourage and incentivize creatively thinking about how to provide necessary services in Story County.
Okay.
Now I have three circles.
I drawn three circles now. Because what we really are talking about, we're talking about current agencies in the asset process with current programs. And that and the percentage funding that we always look
the
at.
The reality that costs are going up.
That costs are going up. Yep. Okay. Then with our current asset agencies, would be the new pilot program or anybody who would qualify to be an asset agency because you guys can bring on asset number nine.
Yeah, proposal of a new service through asset, whether it's an ongoing
or a new,
but it's part of the asset process, but it's a new or expanded service.
And then the third is always the option that I think has not always been known could be approached, or we still struggle with a little bit. I'm thinking of the Project Iowa, but that had its own other struggles. But I mean, you know, we referred it back to assets, right? The Project Iowa. But so I'm just saying there's always a third basket, if you will, where if someone couldn't go through the asset process, then they could come directly to us.
Sure. And Project Iowa, I think, is a great example, at least from my perspective, Loris, because at least for me, I felt like we needed to refer that to asset, not even necessarily because I was looking at it as an asset-funded entity. Could have been. That would have been fine with me. But it was that asset had the expertise to ask some of the questions that I felt like we needed to know before we could make the decision. And so don't view that referral to asset as saying, oh, my God, you've got to become an asset agency. It was more, these are the pros who know the questions to ask and get. And I think what we found is there were some issues that maybe the three of us didn't have quite the expertise to ask. And so that was the rationale there.
That was the right referral. So, yeah. Okay. So we've got the three baskets. I think I'm supporting the new basket or expanded. I'm supporting what you're saying about this concept for either new services, either from an asset agency or from outside. So let's look at, do we have some capacity to fund to help meet needs now with new programs?
I'm speaking off the cuff here, Loris, but let me tell you the way I would see something like this work. I would see that we would give direction to Deb today to go back to our volunteers, specifically Story County volunteers, and say, come back to the Board of Supervisors. Deb, is a couple weeks enough time? Come back in a couple weeks with a proposal to give more specificity to safety, health, well-being of children and adults, and prevention of and early intervention services that provide outreach activities. Give us a little more specificity there. What would be helpful as you consider things? And then on a separate tracks, right, so a separate conversation but being had at the same time, is what if the Board of Supervisors this year in our asset funding allocation, we said, okay, we're going to be able to increase our funding allocation for existing services by, and I'm making up a number, 5%. But we're also going to put in an additional, and again, I'm making up a number, an additional $100,000 toward expanded or new services through the asset process. So you've got the hypothetical 5% to handle with existing services, but then you've also got, tell us the ones that fit our priorities the best that are new or expanded services, and here's some money to handle that.
I appreciate the theoretical. I appreciate the fact you actually had a number, because I was going to turn to you and ask, okay, now that you proposed this, you've given it a structure, what were you thinking on the dollars?
And I was just picking out round numbers.
No. Fine, but after stepping on the budget conversations we just had, we are in a position we can do those things.
Right. And I like setting that specific dollar amount rather than a percentage to help clarify the difference between the two, because I'm going to go back to the pilots, the people who would be doing the new or pilot ones with a specific amount of dollars would understand that it was not guaranteed to go into the flow of the regular services yet, that, you know, you have to come back. You have to prove to us that you...
And hopefully by that point, we're going to have the clear impact scorecard that's going to help give us some more of that information as to... Because assigning new dollars to expanded or new services, which also means, by the way, unproven service, right?
Mm-hmm.
It can't just be in perpetuity. At some point, they've got to prove the impact they're having to Story County for it to be worth the public dollars that we're investing in.
I would take the conversation back to where Deb started it as you listen to the volunteers. Did you hear anybody give voice to something that you would sit there and tell us maybe we should look in this direction or look at something specifically? Because if they're looking for more clarity from us in as far as assigning dollars, not asking for more dollars, but they're looking for more direction, did you hear anything that you would sit there and say, well, this kind of had resonated with you?
Right. What the volunteers talked about at the last allocation process is they appreciate priorities coming from the centers that are listed in priority. So what's the top priority with, you know, what's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 or whatever the case may be. Our list is not prioritized that way. So that would be something I would talk to the county volunteers about if the direction is to go back and meet with them. Which, by the way, I did send the priorities out to them a couple of weeks ago asking for their input. I heard from one volunteer who had some general comments to make about it, but I think having more of a sit-down meeting and talking about it face-to-face might result in some better outcomes. The other thing the volunteers like are specifics, you know, basic needs, meaning food, housing, transportation. Of course, we all know that childcare is, we're a childcare desert, so to speak. That's come up in some other meetings. Continues to be a need in a high-demand area. The medical piece, dental services, of course, the things that are covered through our public health agency. So those are the things that resonate with me as the volunteers talked about services and specifics last allocation process.
So is it a reasonable request if this board were to ask you to go meet with our asset volunteers, the Story County asset volunteers, and come back with some possible more specificity in this argument, and that may include prioritization. Is that a reasonable request to get done in a couple weeks? Because you need this flowing through this board in the next couple weeks, right? Okay. So if that's a reasonable request, board, are you okay with giving Deb that direction?
I am very much, and we all serve on boards and commissions where we have addressed it both through Deb and from our individual perspectives in regards to childcare. Mm-hmm. And I would have a lot of comfort in setting or saying in this county as it grows, as it has successes in its communities and its businesses, we will probably, if we were going to lean in the direction of additional dollars, I would probably like to see us have that conversation. I'd like you to introduce that into the conversation with the volunteers, please. But I think it's reasonable. If you think 2 weeks or time is sufficient, then let's do it.
In your initial presentation, you also mentioned the fact about as their requests are coming in for what we call new services, but I heard, you know, to fund a new employee, okay? And just to throw out this thought, too, I'm thinking back to the YSS model specifically, maybe just because when George came, it was all broken out. He always asked for so much money in categories. So So I'm interested if they've got employees who are providing this service through another, through their other role, you know, that maybe that be singled out about, all right, now the agency's saying truly it's time to add another person, but they can show that they've already dealt with it or been trying to deal with it through their existing staff, you know, by parsing out 10% here or whatever. It's just something for the volunteers, just a throwing a thought idea out if they are trying to figure out when to look at a new employee.
Right, absolutely. I mean, I think it's understandable that a lot of the services provided by these agencies, you know, the costs are wrapped up in personnel costs. No question about that. I think of one of the new service requests that we got, and it came from Access, and it had to do with emergency crime and victim housing. They currently are using volunteers in that way. So it's a very low-level kind of service at this point in time. They see the need to grow that into a full-time position, and then they would also use, and this was in part of their narrative about the request, they would also use that full-time position to also address after-hours crisis response. So they're looking at, you know, other ways to involve that staff person with other services and share other responsibilities. That's one example, but,
sure. Yeah.
But yeah, point well taken, Morris, because I think we all know we don't want to see there to be, you know, overstaffing in agencies, and I think for the most part, most agencies, especially because they're nonprofits, realize the importance of using staff to the best capacity that they can.
And, you know, and that, those are good points. I had been thinking more along the line your ability to prove, have a little experience starting out with, that they have some kind of foundational base. But yeah, so
well,
all of
and,
it, yeah.
And I'll add to that, one of the questions on the new and expanded service application is, how did you identify this need for this service? And a lot of the time, those agencies will respond with, you know, it's best practice, you know, we're using the SAMHSA model, we've done a survey based on needs from other clientele and our other programs, we see this as an up-and-coming need. So we do try to vet that and understand where the agency is coming from and how they determine that need. We also want them to tie it back to the most recent community need survey, which is done every 5 years, so they'll pull information from those sources as well.
You mentioned this fall, okay, or whatever the community life. When is the next one due? When will
2020?
Other questions?
Thank you, Deb.
We comfortable with the direction that I believe we're offering, Deb, which is to meet with volunteers, two tracks. One is talk about more specificity. The second one is to visit with them about conceptually this idea that Story County would come forward with, in essence, two different places of dollars, one for existing and the other for trying to expand services that would impact the residents of Story County. Good conversation.
Yes, very good. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Deb. Next is public forum number two, opportunities for members of the public to comment on anything. We can't take any action since it's not on the agenda, but we might take actions in the future. Anybody wishing to address us on anything? Seeing no one moving the microphone, liaison assignments. Laura, tell us about Hawaii.
It was beautiful. It was sunny. Thank you very much. I came back recreated, as they say. So it's good to be.
You were due for a couple. You and I talked about it yesterday. You were due for a couple weeks.
And I
just getting away. And I just genuinely appreciate that you were able, or it appears you were able to unplug a little bit.
I was.
And I think there's real benefit in that.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Marty.
Several things. I would like, when I'm done, you tell us how TELC is doing. We just say that we are just days away from moving into our Newton County sheds, and I will be trying to get with a Marshall County supervisor to get into Marshall County to see what they're going through right now after the tornado. Okay. So as we do our Coop Cog exercises, I would like to see in real time, because we had Jill Eaton was speaking at the regional meeting on Thursday, and it was all she could do not to cry to tell the story, but her office had 7 minutes from notification
of a tornado was imminent to the fact the office was virtually destroyed. And they are displaced into areas about town. They are conducting services where we sat there through our exercises as we've done. We just think of it in hours and days. They're looking at the turnaround time of a year.
Absolutely. And maybe beyond that. And it's even more than that, because what happens so often is you've got facilities. We're doing, so I'm on the Micah board, which has primary locations in Marshalltown. And you're dealing with facilities that in many cases are a little outdated. They're adequate, but not a whole lot more than adequate, right? But it gives you your space to provide whatever service you're providing. But then you have something like this that is devastating, that wipes it out. And now all of a sudden you've got to have the conversation, well, do you rebuild to adequate? Or where do you go?
And I think
where do those dollars come from? And so, again, I'll just remind you, so people are saying it's going to be months or a year, and I think they're underestimating the amount of time. This is, after all, government. Which we talk about pretty regularly. I think we are we're going to see our colleagues in Marshall County really have a little bit of a gypsy nature for a little while, where you're going to see services move around. Story County went through it when we had the flooding over there in our vent where we provided human services. Well, Deb went through this. We provided our human services operation down there where the squall overflowed, and there was a little nomadic kind of experience for a little while you deal with that. Story County, I think, rightly made the decision that we weren't going to build back to adequate. We built what was necessary at that time. I think Marshall's going to go through that now. I've been really pleased with how what you expect out of Story County, right? Promise, our emergency management team had contacted Marshall County within minutes of the event, offering assistance. I know that our courts are doing the same, and actually housing some people from Story County.
I sent you that message from Earth Marketing, and what they put in foodstuffs and water and employees over there to do cleanup, and that's good corporate stewardship out of Story County in helping people that live in the greater Marshalltown area that work in the data. So, I mean, there's been some outreach already, but the thing is, I think you tell the story the way I see it coming unfolding, for the fact that on a planning basis, as we bring these things to ourselves, maybe our sight line needs to be a little broader.
And the other thing I want to point to, because I appreciate Jody's comment, that they only had 7 minutes from notification until the building began. They had 7 minutes. Which is phenomenal when you think about just a few years ago, you were getting 30 seconds warning. And so we continue to expand that out. And 7 minutes, while that's not very long, that's a heck of a lot better than 30 seconds. And I think it's a testament how was there not loss of life? You asked about Tilk. We've got hard surfaces at Tilk. Not all the hard surfaces, but a lot of them. We've got what used to be storage containers and are now going to be, in effect, gazebos set in place. It's really, you can tell what it's going to be. It's not what it's going to be yet, but you can tell what it's going to be. And I'm excited. We're going to get a gator, Loris, and we're going to get you out there.
Great.
And we're going to get out there and walk. It'll be later this fall once things start to come in, but it's really looking good out there. The whole area is really exciting now with McFarland fully open and the daycare center open there. There are lots and lots of good things happening out there. And it's a... I think it is an accurate representation of all the things that Ames, Iowa State, and Story County can be when somebody comes in and looks at it. And it's to the point you can see what it's going to be, but we're still moving dirt and there's still construction going on, which gives you a really nice feel for what's happening in Story County right now. We are, in fact, growing, and I like the way we're handling it. Anything else, Marty?
Yeah.
I'm good. If there's nothing else for us, I take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.